Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're doing something that might initially sound a bit like eating your vegetables.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But stick with me here because I think this is actually about learning how to cook the entire meal. We are talking about Microsoft Word.
Right.
And I can already hear some of you sighing out there. You're thinking, I know how to type. I know how to hit the space bar. Why on earth do I need a deep dive on a word processor?
It's the classic reaction. I mean, it's arguably the most ubiquitous piece of software on the planet. Everyone has used it, but very few people actually know it.
And that is the exact distinction we're making today. We're looking at a stack of research and training material from the Office Management Vocational Training Program at WESCO, Cameroon.
Right, specifically Module 1, Lesson 1.
Exactly. Understanding the MS Word Working Interface. And the reason I really wanted to cover this is that I realized something sort of embarrassing while I was reading through the source material. I have been using Word for probably 20 years, and I am definitely a random clicker.
You, and 90% of the population, honestly. The random clicker is actually a specific archetype they mention in the training.
Right.
It's the user who knows what they want the document to look like. You know, they say, I want this bold, or I want a picture right here. But they just don't have a mental map of where that tool actually lives.
So they just click tabs.
They click tabs, they hunt, they peck, and they get incredibly frustrated.
It totally feels like trying to find a light switch in a dark room that you've never been in before. You're just patting the wall, hoping to get lucky.
Exactly. And that friction, that momentary panic of where is it, it really accumulates.
Which that does.
If you lose 5 seconds searching for a tool and you do that 50 times a day,
yeah,
you aren't just losing time. You're losing your cognitive flow. You're breaking your concentration on the actual writing to fight the software.
Which brings us to the source material's really strong metaphor right out of the gate to combat this. They compare opening Microsoft Word to stepping into a cockpit.
It's a brilliant analogy, really. Think about a commercial airliner. When a pilot sits down, they are surrounded by hundreds of switches, dials, screens, levers.
Just totally overwhelming.
Right. To a passenger or a novice, it just looks like chaos. But to the pilot, it's not chaos at all. It's a system. Every quadrant of that dashboard has a very specific function.
And the pilot obviously doesn't just start flipping switches to see what happens.
No, definitely not. I wonder what this red button does is not something you want to hear on a plane. That's a crash. But that is exactly how we treat Word.
We just ignore the dashboard.
We ignore the dashboard completely. We just grab the yoke, the keyboard in this case, and start driving and just sort of hope we don't need to change altitude.
So the goal of this WESCO module is essentially to give you your instrument rating.
Yes.
We want to stop you from flying by, looking out the window and guessing, and get you flying by the instruments.
Beautifully put. We're going to deconstruct the cockpit. We'll look at the philosophy of the interface, why things are where they are, and how to just stop fighting the program.
And this isn't just for our own personal satisfaction. The source material emphasizes over and over that this is vocational training.
Right, it's for the APC exam.
Exactly, the APC exam. And for professional office management in general. There's a really hard line drawn here. Casual users survive, but professional users thrive.
That's the key takeaway right there. A professional doesn't guess. A professional knows. So if you are ready to stop being a passenger in your own document, let's look at the map.
Do it. The flight plan for today covers the entire journey. We're going to start at the launch pad, which is the start screen.
Then we move up to the ceiling.
The title bar. Then we check the command centers, the ribbon, and the quick access toolbar. After that, we'll descend into the workspace, the canvas itself.
And finally, we look at the heads-up display down at the bottom.
The status bar. And we will wrap up with the lab section. The source material actually provides specific practical assignments.
Scavenger hunt and a logic test.
Yeah, which we will walk through together to prove whether you've actually learned the layout or if you're just sort of nodding along with us.
So let's start at the very beginning. You click the blue icon. The program launches. But you don't go straight to a white page, do you?
No, you hit the launch pad, the start screen.
Right, this is the backstage area. Or you can think of it like the lobby. It's a liminal space. You aren't really working yet. You are deciding what to work on.
And usually, I mean, honestly, I just blindly click the first thing I see because I just want to get typing.
Mm-hmm.
But the interface is actually offering options here.
A lot of options.
There's a list of recent documents on the left and then this huge gallery of templates on the right. Resumes, brochures, flyers, you name it.
Those templates are very tempting. They are essentially the autopilot settings. Microsoft has pre-configured the cockpit for you. They're saying, hey, here's a resume where we already set the margins and picked all the fonts.
Which sounds great, right?
For a casual user, sure, it's fine. But the Wesco material is actually very strict here about the learning process.
Yeah, they treat the templates almost like a trap for the student.
Because they obscure the mechanics. If you just use a template, you never learn how those margins were set. You don't learn how the styles were built in the first place. You are just filling in the blanks.
So the expert advice here, especially for the APC exam and for really mastering the interface, is to basically ignore the shiny templates.
Completely ignore them. You want the blank document.
The blank document sounds so boring.
It's not boring at all. It's potential. It's the empty studio. When you click blank document, you are crossing a threshold. You're telling the software, I don't need your help with the structure. I will build the structure myself.
That's the moment you enter the Word working environment.
Officially, yes.
Okay, so I click blank document. The lobby disappears. The cockpit lights up. Now I'm looking at the main interface.
Yeah.
And the very first thing, the very top sliver of the window. Honestly, I never look at this part. The title bar.
Most people don't. It's kind of like the license plate on a car. You know it's there, but you don't really read it while you're driving. It's
Brilliant.
actually communicating two very important pieces of data. First, the application name, Microsoft Word. And second, and this is critical for your anxiety levels, the document name.
And usually when I start, it just says document one.
Document one or document two. It's a generic placeholder.
Yeah.
But I really want you to reframe how you see that text. Document one isn't a name. Document one is a warning
A
status.
warning, like a red alert.
Basically, yes. It's a warning that says this file exists only in the random access memory of your computer, the RAM. It has not been written to the hard drive. It has not been made permanent.
So the power goes out.
Or if your computer just decides to crash while the title bar says document one, that work is likely gone forever. Or at best, stuck in some messy recovery cache.
So document one basically translates to unsaved and vulnerable.
Precisely. The moment you hit save and give it a real name, like, say, Deep Dive Script V1, the title bar changes. And that change is your visual confirmation that the file is now physically written to the disk.
It's a safety check.
A professional always glances at the title bar to ensure they aren't working in the danger zone.
That is a really profound mental shift. I don't think I'll ever look at document one the same way again. Now, if we shift our eyes to the right, just to the corner, we have the window controls, the big three. Minimize, maximize, and close.
The traffic lights.
Right, I know what these do. Minimize hides it, maximize makes it big, close kills it. But the source material treats these with a surprising amount of respect. Is there something I'm missing about a simple minimize button?
It's all about workflow management. Think about the difference between minimize and close. A lot of users, when they are done with a task for a moment, say they just need to check an email real quick. They might actually close the document and then reopen it 5 minutes later.
I totally do that. It feels like cleaning off my desk.
But it's incredibly inefficient. Closing the program dumps the memory. It stops the engine completely. Opening it again requires the computer to reload the entire software, reload the file, and rebuild the cache.
Oh, I see.
Minimize, on the other hand, that little dash is completely different. It puts the engine in idle. It tucks the window down into the task bar, but it keeps everything ready to go.
So minimize is like pausing a movie, but close is literally turning off the TV.
Exactly. And for a power user, managing your open windows using minimize and restore is key to multitasking smoothly.
You mentioned restore. There's a nuance with maximize, right? The square button.
Yes. Sometimes you don't want the window to take up the entire screen. You want it restored down so it's floating.
Why would I want it floating, though? I usually want to see as much as possible.
Well, maybe you need to reference a website while you type.
Hmm.
Or maybe you're copying data back and forth from an Excel sheet. Knowing how to toggle that middle button from full screen to floating window allows you to build a workspace where you can see multiple things at once.
It's about controlling your environment.
Right, not just accepting the default full screen view.
Okay, let's slide back over to the other side of the top bar, the top left. This is a section that I feel like is almost the VIP section of the interface. The quick access toolbar. The QAT.
The QAT is your utility belt.
It's so tiny, though. It's just a few little icons sitting way up there in the corner.
Oh.
Super easy to miss.
It is designed to be unobtrusive, yes, but it's also designed to be permanent. And this is a really crucial distinction. The big ribbon right below it,
Yeah.
that changes constantly.
Depending on what you click.
Right, if you click different tabs, the buttons all change. The ribbon is dynamic, but the quick access toolbar is static. It is always there.
So it's the one constant. No matter where I am in the program, the QAT is watching over me. What's actually in there by default?
The default trio. First, you have the save icon, the floppy disk.
Which we really have to acknowledge is a hilarious skeuomorph. It's a total relic of the 90s.
It is, but it's become the universal symbol for make this permanent. Then next to that, you have the two most powerful buttons for learning any piece of software, undo and redo.
The backward arrow and the forward arrow.
Yes.
I want to stop on undo for a second because the source material really highlights this as a major interface element. But isn't it just for fixing typos?
Oh, it is so much more than that. Undo is your psychological safety net. Think about why people are often afraid of computers. They're afraid they're going to break something.
Right.
They're afraid they'll delete the wrong paragraph or mess up the formatting so badly that they can't ever fix it.
I touched it and now everything is weird. I hear that all the time.
Exactly. The undo button, that backward arrow, is the software's promise that you can travel back in time. It allows you to experiment freely. You can say, what happens if I make this text size 72?
You click it.
Click. Ah, oh, that looks terrible.
Click undo.
Click undo and you are safely back where you started. If you didn't have undo, you would be paralyzed. You'd never try anything new.
So the QAT holds save, which is security, and undo, which is basically courage. That's a pretty powerful little corner.
And here is the real power user secret that the Wesco module reveals. You can actually change it.
What do you mean change it?
There is a tiny, almost invisible down arrow right next to those icons. That is the customized menu.
This feels like hacking the system.
Yeah.
I could just add my own buttons up there.
You can add almost anything. The source material strongly suggests adding print preview.
Why print preview specifically?
Think about the daily workflow of an office manager. You type, you check how it looks on the page. You type some more, you check again. If you have to go file, then print, then preview every single time. That's three clicks.
Yeah, that gets tedious.
But if you put the icon directly in the QAT, it's one click.
Two clicks saved every time you check your work.
And you multiply that by 50 times a day, you just save yourself 100 clicks. You saved cognitive load, you stayed in the flow. Customizing the QAT is really the first step in making the software work for you instead of you working for the software.
I absolutely love that. Customize the cockpit. Move the landing gear lever to where you can easily reach it. All right, now we have to talk about the elephant in the room, the main dashboard, the beast itself, the ribbon.
Ah, yes, the ribbon.
It takes up the entire top inch of the screen. It's just packed with hundreds of icons, tiny arrows, words, galleries. To me, this is the main source of the overwhelm. It looks like the control panel of the space shuttle.
It was actually designed that way on purpose, believe it or not. Before the ribbon, back in the older versions, we had menus. File, edit, view. You had to click the word to see a drop-down list.
Everything was hidden away.
Exactly. The features were all buried in drawers. The ribbon, which was introduced way back in Office 2007, was a massive philosophy change. It's all about surface area.
Surface area.
They wanted to expose the tools. They basically took everything out of the drawers and laid it all out on the kitchen counter.
Right, but the problem is now your counter is completely covered in tools.
Which is why we need to organize the mess. The Wesco material breaks it down into a very specific hierarchy.
This is the mental map we need to build, right?
Mm.
The ribbon is not just a random collection.
Right. It has a strict three-part structure, tabs, groups, and commands.
Tabs, groups, commands. Let's take them one by one. The tabs are the words at the very top. Home, insert, layout.
Think of the tabs as your intent. It's the big overarching question. What is my goal right now?
My intent. Okay.
The software designers categorize basically all human word processing intent into these tabs. If your intent is, I want to create something that wasn't there before, like a picture or a table or a chart.
Go to the insert tab.
Right. Insert equals create. Now, if your intent is, I want to change the physical paper itself, the margins, the size, the portrait or landscape orientation.
I'd go to the layout tab.
Exactly. Yeah. If your intent is, I want to polish the WorkSo spell check translation, adding comments.
That would be the review tab.
And if your intent is simply, I want to change what the text looks like, make it bold, change the color, change the font.
That's the home tab.
Stay home for text. That is the mantra. The home tab is the default landing spot because 80% of word processing is just formatting text.
So if I'm getting frustrated, it's probably because I'm looking for a layout tool inside the insert tab. My intent doesn't match the category I'm in.
Exactly. You're looking for a hammer in the plumbing aisle of the hardware store. You have to be in the right aisle first. Now, once you click the correct tab, look at the second layer, the groups.
These are those sections divided by those really thin vertical lines.
Yes, and they have names at the very bottom of the ribbon. Font paragraph styles. These are the subcategories. They bundle related tools together.
So going back to the drawer analogy, I'm in the kitchen, which is the tab. Now I'm looking at the cutlery drawer, which is the group.
Exactly. And inside that cutlery drawer, you finally find the fork. The fork is the command. The specific individual button. Bold, italic, underline.
So the hierarchy is tab, which room am I in? Group, which drawer am I opening? Command, which specific tool am I grabbing?
If you just pause for one single second before you click and ask yourself, what is my intent? You will completely stop the random clicking. You will start navigating with purpose.
That actually makes it feel so much less chaotic. It's just a filing system. But there's one thing that still drives me crazy. Sometimes the ribbon just disappears.
Oh, the water collapse.
Yeah, I'll double-click something by accident and poof, it slides up and vanishes.
This is actually a feature, but it definitely feels like a bug to beginners. It's designed to give you more vertical screen space, but if you don't know why it happened, you feel like you broke the cockpit.
I usually just panic and click everything until it comes back down.
You can pin it back down permanently. There's usually a little thumbtack icon or an arrow on the far right side. But again, this goes back to the why. Why does it hide in the first place?
To give me more room to write.
To let you focus on the writing, yes. When you need a tool, you click the tab and it slides down. You use the tool and it slides back up out of your way. It's on demand.
Okay, so it's not broken. It's just being polite. It's getting out of my line of sight.
Exactly.
Let's move down from the ceiling now. We are dropping into the main area, the big white page, the canvas.
The document area. This is where the magic happens. But even here, people miss the really subtle instrumentation.
What instrumentation? It's just a blank white box, isn't it?
It's actually a coordinate system. And the most misunderstood element on this entire page is the blinking line.
The cursor.
The insertion point. We always call it the cursor, but insertion point is actually a much better name because it perfectly describes its function. It indicates exactly where the next character will arrive.
Why is this misunderstood, though? It seems pretty obvious. You type and letters appear where the line is blinking.
It's because of the mouse. People confuse the I-beam, which is the mouse pointer floating around the screen, with the insertion point, which is the blinking line.
Oh, I see.
Here is the classic error. A user looks at the bottom of the page. They hover their mouse down there. They think, okay, I want to type right here. And they just start typing on the keyboard.
But the blinking line is still stuck at the very top of the page.
Exactly. So the text appears at the top, not where their eyes are looking. They didn't click the mouse to move the insertion point. They just moved their eyes.
It's the click versus look problem.
And this applies heavily to formatting, too. The source material actually has a specific why it matters warning about this. It says Word applies formatting where the cursor is located, not necessarily where you think it should be.
Oh, wow, I've totally done this.
Mm-hmm.
I want to bold a specific word. I look at the word, I move my mouse over the word, then I go up and click the bold button. But my actual cursor is sitting in the paragraph below.
And suddenly the entire paragraph below turns bold. The software is literal. It doesn't know what you're looking at. It only knows where the insertion point is currently anchored. You have to place the anchor before you drop the boat.
That is a deep truth of computing right there. The computer is literal. It is not a mind reader.
Now, framing this big white space, we have the rulers. The horizontal ruler across the top and the vertical one down the left side.
I'll be honest, I usually just turn these off. They make the screen look kind of cluttered to me.
See, that is a passenger mindset. A pilot needs the gauges. The rulers are your instrument flight rules. They show you the invisible skeleton of the document.
What do they show me that I can't just see with my own eyes on the page?
Margins, indents, tab stops. If you look at a paragraph and it's indented, why is it indented? Is it because someone hit the spacebar 5 times, which is a huge sin, by the way? Or is it because the first line indent marker on the ruler was actually moved over?
If I don't have the ruler turned on, I literally can't tell the difference.
And if you can't tell, you can't fix it properly. If you're trying to align text and you're just eyeing it, you will never get it perfect. The ruler allows for actual mathematical precision.
Which Wesco says is critical for the exam.
The Wesco material says this is absolutely critical for the APC exam. You need to verify your alignment, not just guess at it.
So if I open Word tomorrow and I don't see the rulers up there?
Don't panic. Go to the View tab. Remember, your intent is I want to view something. Look for the show group. And simply check the box that says ruler.
Toggle it on. Okay. I am officially putting keep rulers on my list of professional habits.
It is a total game changer for troubleshooting weird formatting issues.
We also have scroll bars, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just for moving up and down the page.
Right, a vertical scroll bar on the right. Basic navigation for long documents.
Okay, so we have the top, we have the middle. Now let's look at the very bottom, the basement of the window, the status bar.
The status bar is your heads-up display, the HUD. It sits quietly down there at the bottom frame, but it is constantly updating with live data.
What exactly is it telling me?
On the far left, you have document information, page count. So it'll say page 105.
Useful to know how long your document is at a glance.
And right next to it, the word count.
Now, for a student or journalist, or frankly, anyone with a strict limit, this is usually the most stressful number on the entire screen.
It is the fuel gauge. Do I have enough words? Do I have way too many? The source material actually calls this a pro tip. You don't need to go open a special menu to count your words. It's live. It updates automatically with every single keystroke.
I remember in much older versions, you'd had to actually run a separate word count tool.
Yeah.
Now it's just ambient information.
Exactly. It's just there.
Right.
Now, if you move your eyes over to the right side of the status bar, we have the view buttons. These are small icons that drastically change how the entire application behaves.
The default is print layout, right?
Yes. Right. Print layout. That shows you the literal paper. It shows the physical margins, the page breaks. It completely simulates the physical printed object. But there is another mode that the material really highlights. Read mode.
Read mode. What's the psychology behind using that?
Think about the two completely different brain states of writing. There is creation and editing, so typing, fixing typos, formatting paragraphs. That state needs the ribbon. That state needs the rulers.
You need your tools.
But then there is consumption and reviewing, actually reading what you wrote to see if the ideas flow and make sense.
And when I'm just reading, all those buttons are actually pretty distracting.
Exactly. Read mode completely strips the interface. The ribbon disappears. The rulers vanish. The text reflows to fill the screen, kind of like a book or a Kindle. It turns the software from a busy typewriter into a clean e-reader.
That's actually really smart. It physically forces your brain to switch modes. Stop fixing the font and start actually reading the sentences.
It facilitates deep work. But I will say, it can be terrifying for a beginner because suddenly all their familiar tools are just gone.
Oh yeah, where did my bold button go? Am I trapped?
If you don't realize you clicked into read mode, you feel totally trapped. You just need to hit the escape key or click the print layout icon down on the bottom right to get back to the cockpit.
And finally, on the far right, next to the view buttons, the zoom.
The slider.
I used to think, and this is honestly a bit embarrassing to admit, that zooming in actually made the font bigger. Like if I wanted to print it larger so my dad could read it, I would just zoom in to 200%.
That is a very, very common misconception. Zoom is strictly for your eyes. It is exactly like using a magnifying glass over kiss paper. It doesn't change the actual ink on the paper. It just brings the paper physically closer to your face.
Why is this important to distinguish for the learner?
Because if you actually want big text on the physical printout, you must change the font size up in the home tab. If you just want to read it comfortably on your monitor while you work, you use the zoom slider.
That makes total sense.
And here is a major ergonomic tip. Most people sit hunched over squinting at their screen at exactly 100% zoom. Sit back in your chair. Zoom the page in to 120 or 130%. Save your posture. Let the software interface bridge the gap for you.
Don't fight the document.
Don't fight the document.
Okay, we have successfully toured the entire machine. We know the launch pad, the command centers, the workspace, and the HUD. But as the WSCO training emphasizes over and over, knowledge is passive. Skill is active.
It is time for the lab.
The source material gives us some great practical assignments. I really want to walk through these not just as a boring checklist, but to explain what they're actively testing. Why did the curriculum designers include these specific tasks?
Let's look at task one, the scavenger hunt.
Item one says, find the launcher.
This is a tricky one. If you look in the bottom right corner of some of the groups on the ribbon, like the font group, for example, there is a tiny, tiny little square with a diagonal arrow in it.
Oh, yeah, I see it. It's almost microscopic.
That is the dialog box launcher.
Why on earth do I need to find that?
Because the ribbon doesn't actually show everything. It only has room to show the top 90% of the most used tools. If you need the deep, advanced, nitty-gritty settings like small caps or very specific paragraph spacing rules, they are hidden inside that launcher.
So finding this little arrow teaches you that there is always more depth.
It teaches you to look for the hidden menus, exactly.
Okay, item two, the word counter. It says type your name and watch the status bar.
This tests your awareness of the feedback loop. Do you actually see the machine responding to your inputs in real time? It proves that the system is live and tracking you.
Item 3, the real toggle. Go to the view tab, turn it off, and turn it back on.
This is a control test. Can you modify your own environment? If the cockpit is too messy, can you clean it up? If it's too empty, can you add the gauges back?
It empowers the user to say, I decide what the screen looks like.
Right. It breaks the feeling that the software is in charge.
And item 4, customize the QAT. Add the print preview button.
This is the graduation from simply being a user to being an owner. You are permanently altering the software installation to better suit your personal workflow. You are claiming the territory.
I love that concept. It's like carving your initials into the digital desk. It's yours now. All right, now task 2, interface manipulation.
This one is all about fluidity and comfort. The instructions are the zoom slider drill. So you take the slider down to 10%, then blast it up to 400%, then bring it back to a standard 100%.
Why do that? Just to watch the page shrink and grow?
To desensitize you to the visual change. Users often get really panicked when things suddenly look wrong. Oh no, my paper is tiny, or oh no, the words are huge.
By doing it on purpose, you learn that it's just a temporary view setting.
Exactly. You didn't break the document at all. You just temporarily changed the camera lens.
It builds resilience.
And then there's the view modes drill. Switch your screen to read mode and then switch it back. Again, it's about knowing where your escape routes are. If you accidentally fall into a different view, you need that muscle memory to smoothly get back to print layout without panicking.
Finally, task 3, the tab logic test. This is the mental simulation. We aren't even clicking anything for this one. We are just thinking.
This tests that intent mapping we talked about earlier.
Listener, play along with us here. I'm going to give you a scenario based on the source material. Yeah. You have to shout out or just think of the correct tab on the ribbon.
Let's do it.
Scenario A. I want to add a picture of a cat to my document.
Think about your intent. The intent is adding something completely new. Therefore, the answer is the insert tab.
Scenario B. I want to change the physical page from portrait to landscape.
Your intent here is modifying the actual paper structure. So the answer is the layout tab.
Scenario C. I want to check my document for spelling errors before I email it.
Intent is quality control and polish. Answer is the review tab.
Scenario D. I want to turn the ruler on because it disappeared.
Intent is changing what I visually see on the screen. Answer is the view tab.
If you can answer those instantly without hunting, you have officially stopped random clicking. You have built the mental map.
And that is the exact moment you become an efficient professional user.
This has been a massive, massive download of information. We have taken a piece of software that we usually totally take for granted or frankly actively resent, and we've tried to see the underlying logic beneath it all.
We've really moved from the passenger seat up to the pilot seat today.
I think the biggest takeaway for me personally is just the why behind everything. The ribbon isn't cluttered just to annoy me. It's cluttered to expose my options. The Document 1 title isn't just a generic name, it's a critical warning. The cursor isn't just a blinking line, it's an anchor point.
When you truly understand the why the frustration just evaporates, you stop fighting the tool and you finally start using it, you realize that Microsoft Word is actually a very obedient, very literal machine. If you give it the right command, it does exactly what you want it to do every single time.
So here is my challenge to you, the listener. This is our provocative closing thought for today. We talked about the blank document being the professional standard. I want you to open a brand new blank document today.
Okay.
But I want you to do something radical when you open it. Don't type a single word.
Resist the urge completely.
Just sit there. Hover your mouse over the ribbon. Don't even click. Just hover. Read the little tooltips that pop up when you hover. This is bold. This is styles. Look at the horizontal and vertical rulers. Check the numbers on the status bar. Spend 5 full minutes just being in the cockpit without trying to fly the plane.
Be a tourist in your own software for once. Really get to know the neighborhood.
Because the more you implicitly trust the instruments, the smoother your flight is going to be. And the next time we meet, we are actually going to start flying.
That's lesson 2.
Lesson 2 is coming up. We are going to talk about making those words really pop. Text formatting. Styles, the advanced stuff that makes a document actually look professional and ready for the real world.
It's going to be a great session.
But for now, minimize the window, take a well-deserved break, and we will catch you in the next deep dive. Thanks so much for listening.
See you next time.